Frank Kane, alcoholic. Can you hear me? Are we doing the deal? We're doing the deal, all the way down the back there. Anyway, I'd love to thank everybody, the committee, for inviting me here this evening. Kathy, Karen, Patty, and especially Valerie, who worked, my God, that woman has been hawking tickets around this town here for the last few weeks. It's incredible. But anyway, thanks a million. The corned beef and cabbage is wonderful. The fellowship was wonderful. And Mr. Sweeney and Rita gave us a good dancing exhibition out there for two old farts with more than 40 years each. I'm telling you, they're doing the deal. That's all there is to it. I just heard a good little story here the other day. I got a few Jewish friends here tonight. You know the difference in a Jewish leprechaun and an Irish leprechaun? Mary Olive told me this one. The Jewish leprechaun invested his pot of gold and the Irish leprechaun drank his. Oh, what would you expect? Well, anyway, it started a long time ago. In a little place back in the west of Ireland, I came from a place called County Mayo, down a little town called Newport, and grew up there, had a great childhood. I have nothing, only fond memories of my childhood. Went off to England as a young lad before my 15th birthday looking for work. Nothing big about that. It'd be called child abuse nowadays, but it wasn't that time. That's what we did. I went to England, and I spent many years over there in England, in around Manchester, and I travelled around England quite a bit, and had a great time. I just had the best time. I took what they call a pledge. Back in Ireland, when you're a youngster, it's called the Pioneer Total Abstinence Pledge, where you take this pledge that you will never drink. And I took the pledge, and my two brothers took the pledge. And one of my brothers has never taken a drink to this day. The other fellow took a drink when he was about 35 or so, and he can take it and leave it. I took a drink when I was 23, and I could take it, but I couldn't leave it. So I see a lot of heads nodding in agreement with that one, because that's the way we are. If you're alcoholic, you start drinking a little bit too much. And I started doing that at 23, and I often summarize. I'm not a great fan of drunkalogs, because I really don't care how much you drank. The fact that you had to come here is what interests me. And now, what interests me is what you're doing since you got here. Well, I often summarize my drinking like this: first, it was fun; then it was fun and problems; and then it was problems. And when it gets to that stage of the game, the book spells it out. It says we're like men who have lost their legs. We can never grow new ones. Pretty blunt. My favorite definition of rock bottom is, a lot of people have mixed feelings and confusion about rock bottom. My favorite definition of rock bottom is when the consequences of Frank's drinking became unacceptable to Frank. That's it. It's not to do with money, with relationships, with jail, with kids or wives. Maybe to do with all of them, but not until the consequences became unacceptable to Frank. A lot of people get very mixed up about that. And anyway, when that day comes, if that day has come in your life — I had a young man down in the car with me here tonight, and I asked him, has that day come in his life? And he said, yes. Well, if that day has come in your life, you've made the biggest move you'll ever make if you're an alcoholic. Admit you're powerless over alcohol and that your life is unmanageable, and totally accept it. That's the one step in the whole program that you have to do, that any of us have to do, fully, 100%. No reservations. There was an old fellow back in Ireland, Kevin, and he used to say, "Oh, jeez," he said, "there's no reservations around here." And we had a guy from Delhi, from India, an Indian from Delhi, Paul. "Excuse me, Paul, but no offense meant. no reservations. And he was talking about the American Indians, you know. You hear it all in AA. I swear to God. I just heard a funny one lately. We can kind of play it by ear here tonight because it's a St. Patrick's Day week, and we can tell a few stories. Eamon just told me a good one. Eamon has an old uncle back in Ireland. And Eamon came here to Las Vegas last year, and he called home. And he said to his uncle, says to him, "And what is it like in Las Vegas?" "Well," he said, it's very warm over here." "And what would it be now?" he said. "Well," he said, "it was 108 in the shade today." "Oh, jeez," the old uncle said, "I'd get out of that shade if I was you." Oh, man, oh, man. Anyways, you'll hear a lot of good stories if you're on Alcoholics Anonymous for a while, especially to do with drink. They tell one back in Ireland about I know we have a number of golfers here tonight. AA is full of golfers. But they tell one about this fellow playing golf, and he hits the ball and it goes into the bushes. And he goes in, and there's the leprechaun lying on the ground with a big lump on his forehead. And the fellow said, "Oh, my God," he said, I'm so sorry. Are you okay?" The leprechaun says, "Oh, yeah, I'm all right. You got me. So the fellow said, No, I don't want to get you." He said, I just want to know if you're okay." I'm all right, but you got your wishes." Oh, the guy said, "No, I don't want any wishes." He said, "I just want to know. I'll take you to the hospital, or what can I do for you?" No, I'm all right. Leave me alone. So anyway, the guy, finally, he agrees to leave him alone, and he goes off about his business. And as he's going away, the leprechaun said, "Well, geez, that's the nicest man I ever met in my life. That's a terrible decent man," he says. "He had me there, he could have got his three wishes." "Well, I'll give him the three wishes. I'll give them to him," he said. "He's a decent man," he says. So he said, "He's a young man," he said, "and he plays golf. We'll give him a game of golf." He said, "A good game of golf." And he says, "He'd like a bit of sex. We'll give him a good sex life," he says. And he said, "Of course, he'd like the money, so we'll give him the money. Job done." So about a year or so later, this guy is playing on the same golf course. And he hits the ball in roughly in the same place again. And there's the leprechaun sitting up on a branch. "Well," he said, "it's yourself." "Well, it's myself. That's right," he said. "How are you?" "Well," he said, "I'm great," he says. He said, "I'm great." And he says, "How was your year?" "Well," he said, "my year?" He said, I can't believe it. I've had such a tremendous year." "Well, you did. And how was your golf game?" He said, "I won the Masters." "You did," said the leprechaun. "Isn't that great?" He says, "Isn't that great?" He said, "How were your finances?" "Well," he said, "I got a million out of that." He said, "And every time I put my hand in my pocket, it seems like I have a pocket full of money." "Oh, that's wonderful. What about your sex life?" "Well," he said, "it's great," he says. "And how many times a week would you be getting it now?" "Well," he said, "I get it once," he said, "and even some weeks even twice," he says. "Well, sure, that's not a lot for a young man your age," he says. He says, "It's not bad for a priest in a small parish." "Well, I'll burn in hell." But getting back to the drink. We never left the drink, did we? Getting back to the drink, God save us. I started this drinking at 23. I came out to America from England. I was brought out as a band leader for a fellow who lives in this town here. Some of you guys might have seen him in the newspaper in recent times. See the old guy who bailed Sandy Murphy out. Anyway, Bill Fuller. But he's not one of us, so I can break his anonymity. So anyway, I played music all over for him. I was his band leader, going to Chicago and New York and San Francisco and Boston, wherever. Run me around at this stuff. He had bands and music stuff going on all over the place. So, but the next thing, I'm 26 years old. I buy a bar in Chicago. And in 1 year, any jackass would know I wasn't a suitable candidate for running a bar. So I sold that bar and I went over to England. And bloody hell, within about a year, I had bought another bar in England. Again, oh, I can't give you too much details here because this, I don't know how about the statute of limitations over in England. But there was hairy stuff went on, I will tell you that. And I got out of that. God, I got out of England by the skin of my teeth. And I went over to Ireland. And within about 3 years again, I'd bought another bar in Ireland. I was in that bar for 7 years, and after 5 years in that bar, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Really, really disillusioned with myself. Very, very, very disillusioned with myself. The past 18 months, I had tried to stop drinking, to get off it for one day. Every day I tried. Every day for a day. I couldn't get off it for one day. So anyway, I finally picked the phone up, and this lady answered the phone, Alcoholics Anonymous. I said to her, I said, do you have a doctor there? She said, no. I said, do you have a counselor? She said, no. And I said, who are you? She said, my name is Anne, and I'm an alcoholic. I thought, what a statement for a woman to make on a phone. I said, this is a screwed-up outfit, if ever there was one. My name is Anne, I'm an alcoholic. Not for me, that stuff. So I guess she detected the pause. She said, would you like to speak to a man? I have a man here. I said, no. I said, is he a doctor or a counselor? She said, no, he's an alcoholic. I said, no. I said, I don't want to talk to an alcoholic, I said. I said, you, and I could see her address in the phone book, Essex Quay. I said, you're on Essex Quay there. She says, yeah. I said, if you look across the river, just down to your left, I said, you'll see a big bar there called the Connacht Man's Ramble. I said, I own that bar. I'm kicking alcoholics out of that place every friggin' day, I says. I don't want to talk to an alcoholic. She says, fair enough, she says. So there was another pause. She says, well, do you want to go to a meeting? I says, where are the meetings? She said, where do you live? I said, I live in Killiney, about 10 miles outside the city. So she said, there's a meeting down the road from you, 1 o'clock today. I said, will there be a doctor there? No. Counselor? No. Alcoholics, she says. Oh, man, I said, this is getting worse. So anyway, the grace of God, I got in my car and I went down to the meeting. And you know, everybody, if you're trying to get off drink every day for a year and a half, you're in pretty bad shape and people know it. We know now, the whole country knew it. But I parked my car away from that building and I walked up to the door and I'm looking around to see if anybody would see me. And I went into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the 6th of August, 1982, and a day at a time from that day to this, and thanks to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't needed to take a drink or a drug or a mood altering chemical of any kind, day at a time. Anyway, that just reminds me of another little story. Now, this story happened right there in that Dunleary where I first went to my first meeting. And I've heard that story told over here lately that it happened in Alaska and in out in Hawaii and different places. But this is a true story. And you guys, a lot of you have heard this story. But there's a fellow called Paddy, there's a fellow called Red Paddy who was a big help to me when I sobered up. And Red Paddy used to tell me about this other Paddy that they had just buried. And he said he was the grandest fella ever. And that's another thing, too. We bury a lot of nice fellas. A lot of nice guys die because people are always patting them on the back and saying, come on now, you know. Anyway, Paddy was one of these guys. And they had the wake in the house, a little terraced house in Dunleary. And he wouldn't go to AA, but they all had a shot at him. So finally, anyway, they were all around the coffin, and this girl who went to school with him was talking to his wife. And they'd all gone to school together and that. And she says, well, poor Paddy, she says, he was the nicest fellow. She says, you know, we grew up together, myself, she said, and we were in the same class in school, and he was a grand lad, she says. And it's a pity he was so fond of the old gargle, the old drink, they call it, the old gargle. She says, well, he did. He liked his drink, the wife said. He did like his drink, she says. And the neighbor says, did he ever try Alcoholics Anonymous? Not at all, she said. He wasn't that bad. He's dead as a kipper. He's lying within the coffin in the kitchen. He wasn't that bad, she says. And I'll tell you something. It comes in different forms. But if you have alcoholism, And as of the year 2005, for those of you who need an update on what's going on in the world of recovery, I have my finger pretty well on the pulse in that deal because I get publications sent to me through the mail. I'm associated with the Silkworth Houses, and they send me all these. And I'm also a board member of the American Association of Halfway Houses. So I get the updates on drug addiction and alcoholism and the treatment of this disease. And as of this month, or last month, 2005, the best that the medical world can come up with is what's going on in rooms like this all around the world. Full stop. That's the deal. So any of you who have any doubts about maybe I should try this or maybe I should try that, well, I'm not going to stop you. But I'll tell you something. As of this year, what's going on in this room and in rooms like it is the best that we know to arrest the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction. Which puts me in mind of Paddy. He comes home one night and he was drunk. And the wife is upstairs. She says, "Paddy, come up to bed." And he's rattling around the kitchen and he's hitting the bloody brick in the furniture. She says, "Will you, for God's sake," she says, "what are you doing? What are you doing down there? Come up to bed," she says. He says, I'll be up in a minute. I'm trying to get a keg of Guinness up the stairs." She said, "Would you leave the keg of Guinness downstairs for God's sake and come up to bed?" I cannot," he said. It's in me belly. In me belly. So much. But I went to this meeting anyway. And again, for a fellow who should have known, who should know, I really didn't know. I was looking around the room to see if I'd know anybody. And sure enough, I knew a fellow. There was a lad sitting across from me. And I had served him. I had served this guy a drink about 6 weeks earlier. I served him, actually, he told me, afterwards, he told me I'd served him his last drink. So he was sitting across from me. And you know what my head told me, my alcoholic head told me? Tommy has a daughter in school with my Fiona. And they went to the convent. And he's going to go home tonight and tell his daughter, Fiona Keane's father is an alcoholic. Now, it didn't occur to me that he was there because he was one. it just tells you how the kind of bad shape we're in at that stage of the game. And I see this all the time. I work a lot. I'm exposed a lot to newcomers, to people coming in right in the door with the smell of drink just gone off their breath. Some of them are off it for a while. Some of them come out of the jails and the penitentiaries and the detoxes. But I'm exposed a lot to those newcomers. And I swear to God, their state of mind is about the same as my state of mind was that day. Now, Red Paddy gave me a word of advice one time. He says, "You know, Frank, keep your memory green," he said. "Remember your early days. Or someday you may reach my vintage," he said. And he was about 10 years sober that time. And he said, "If you have forgotten these early days," he says, "you may have very little to offer a new man walking in that door." And you know, I never forgot that. I never forgot Red Paddy telling me that. And my memory isn't that great about a lot of stuff. But I remember this, the months apart when I took my steps, I can remember them. I logged them like I had to, like my life depended on it. I just thought maybe it did. But I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I used to look up at these steps on the wall, and I'd say, well, these steps would work. These steps would work if somebody believed in God. Well, I didn't believe in God. So anyway, I'm in a meeting one night, and I thought, well, I'll keep going anyway. I'm in a meeting one night, and this Red Eileen said, "This is a wonderful program." She's one of these women that would, like, tell you how it was. Wouldn't put a tooth on anything. "This is a wonderful program," she said. "It works for those people who believe in God. Works for those who don't believe in God." She looked over at where I was. She said, "It even works for those who think they're God," she said. Anyway, and I'm there another night, and I'm sitting beside a girl called Rita. And there was a fellow called Harry. We used to call him Flash Harry. And Flash had been a panhandler and all that stuff in the park years ago, 8 years earlier. So he was talking about how he didn't believe in God or anything. And I gave Rita a nudge. I said, how long is the flesh sober? She says, about 8 years. I says, good. That'll do me. If this deal works for him, no God, that's fine. It'll do me. Anyway, that was then. I went on another 3.5 years. I came out to Las Vegas. And about another 10 years later, I get a call from one of the boys. I'm in touch back there all the time. We talk to each other, my old AA members and some new ones as well. I got a call from Christy. He says, Frank, you'll never guess who we pulled out of a doorway in Dunleary last night. I said, who? He said, the Flash. I said, you're joking me. He said, I'm not. You know, the first words out of my mouth, I said, did he ever get a God? Never got a God. Take what you like out of it. I'm not preaching God. But it's our program spells it out pretty much. If you read that big book there, Third Step. And we talked about it, myself and that new guy coming down the car tonight, about the third step, turning your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand God. There's an old saying back in Ireland, we say, every cripple has his own way of walking. Do the best you can. There's nobody going to judge you. As Bob Brown says, much. But that's the deal. Take those steps. Take those bloody steps. Don't try and do it on your own. I'm telling you. We have this massive stuff on offer. If you get these steps taken and get a sponsor, and a sponsor doesn't have to be a rocket scientist. Just pick somebody who has a sponsor and who has taken the steps. And just take those simple steps. I often say a chimpanzee could take these steps. They're that simple. You know the people I have problems with? The highly educated ones. The ones with the PhDs. I put a few of those through my hands. They can't accept that a couple of little pages out of a notebook will do a fourth step. No, it's got to be a telephone book. 164 pages like the big book. We'll make it 164 pages about me, all about Frank. Well, God bless you. If you want to do it that way, that's fine. That's nothing wrong with that either. But it's not, I don't believe it's necessary. I believe this whole deal, including getting a sponsor, my read on the whole thing is it's an act of humility. Why am I afraid to tell you who I am? Because it's all I have. And you mightn't like me. A lot of people identifying with that down here tonight. Because that's the truth. That's the alcoholic story. It's all I've got. And you mightn't like me. And that's, everybody has that. When we come to that fourth and that fifth step, it's like, I'm never going to tell that. No way will I ever tell that. No way. Well, by the time I had got to my fifth step, or to my fourth step, I had God in my corner. I had come to believe in God. And that happened to me at 90 days, the belief in God. I took my third step at 90 days, give or take about 90 days, because I was put into a secretary's job at 90 days. This Kevin something or other said, we need a secretary in this group. Frank, how long have you got? I said, I got 3 months today. He says, you're it. You're doing the secretary here. It was just for one night, one meeting. There was a meeting every night in this club, in this kind of a club place. And so he says, you do the Sunday night meeting. So I did. Made a big difference in my sobriety. Helped me a lot. If you're new here and you got 90 days sobriety, I strongly recommend you take a commitment like that. Another thing they'll do to you in this outfit, you could be the biggest thief in Las Vegas. They'll make you a treasurer. They'll give you money. And then you have this money in your pocket and you're thinking, oh my God, I just cannot give this back. There's no way I can give them this. They have plenty of money anyway. And you know what? For the most part, what happens is you will think that. And you'll end up giving them the money. Major change in your life. Very simple stuff now. This is very simple stuff. You'll never hear any complicated stuff coming out of my mouth, because I don't believe in it. I don't believe in any complications in this program. I don't believe in dictionaries for the big book, unless, of course, if you're not educated enough to, you know, to know some of the words, well, then maybe you need a dictionary. But for the average Joe who's got a high school education or close enough, this is duck soup. You know, alcoholics have a tendency to confuse the bejesus out of stuff. You know, in the early days when that sixth and seventh step was written, there was a big controversy back in, I don't know, was it Akron or was it in Cleveland? Big controversy about the sixth step says we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. The seventh one says humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. They were going at each other one night in a meeting over there, and somebody picked the phone up to Bill Wilson, and they said, "Will you tell us the difference in the defects of character and the shortcomings? We have a big dispute over here." Bill says, "I just didn't want to use the same word twice." Da. But if it hadn't come from Bill, they were going to get into fisticuffs over it. Simple stuff. Very, very simple stuff. You know, it's a bit like the story about the pupil says to the master, "Master, what is Zen?" The master said, "Zen is working when you work, eating when you eat, sleeping when you sleep, playing when you play." And the pupil said, "But master, that's so simple." The master said, "Yes, but so very few can do it." Alcoholics Anonymous, same deal. Two most important words in the whole deal: show up. Show up. The biggest offender, this thing that you click, the television. Biggest offender. Yeah, I'll go in a bit. Well, there's another meeting in an hour's time. Okay, I'll catch that one. Yeah, well, there's one in the morning. I get the 7 a.m. in the morning. Yeah, I'll get that one. That's where the rot sets in. And believe me, there's a lady called Patty Henderson down in Phoenix, Arizona. She runs a place called Winner House. And she has about over 200 beds down there. She says, when the girls ask her, "What's making my bed to do with getting sober?" She says, "A lot." That's where the rot sets in. The rot sets in somewhere. And it will try, every one of us, that rot will try to set in from time to time with every one of us. And if we're not diligent, it will catch hold and it'll become mold and it'll fester and it'll travel. It'll be like the dry rot. It'll go up into the rafters, and before you know it, the whole bloody roof caves in on top of you. So that's how simple this deal is. I came here to Las Vegas in 1986. And I went down to the Thai club. I asked where there were meetings. I stayed in a motel downtown there. And it didn't take me long to find out where there were meetings. I found out first order of business. As soon as I got into the room, I found out where the Thai club was. And I went straight around to the Thai club. Went to a meeting, met Dick Tucson and a bunch of them. There was a bunch of old-timers around there that time. Met Don Williams. God rest him, now he's dead. Paul Campbell took me in there. And I said to Don, "Do you know any appraisers in the program?" Don says, "How long are you sober?" I said, "I'm 3.5 years. "Ah," he says, "you're safe enough here. Give me Ed Allen's number." I went out to Ed Allen. I got a job as an appraiser straight away. Of course, he had found out. Don had called him and told him, "This guy, he's got a few years under his belt, and he sounds like he's reliable and what have you." And I was. As a matter of fact, Ed Allen made a mistake the day we interviewed. I said to him, "How many days do you work?" He says, 7 days. That was the first mistake he made. "What time do you start in the morning?" 7 a.m. Second mistake. About 8 weeks later, he was sorry he told me that, because I had him under pressure. I was there every morning at 7 o'clock, and I was there Saturday and Sunday morning getting him out of the bed at 7 o'clock. And but that's called becoming reliable in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all it is. There's nothing complicated about that. You just show up, you do what you said you'd do when you said you'd do it. Now, there's none of us without sin. As a matter of fact, it puts me in mind of the time that Jesus came on the crowd. and they were about to stone the poor Mary Magdalene. Do you remember that story? And they had the stone up anyway. And Jesus said, "Let the one among you without sin cast the first rock." And from the back of the crowd, this big brick comes flying and mills the poor woman, knocked her flat on the ground. And Jesus goes, "You know, there are times when you test me, mother." And another time, they tell me that Jesus and Moses went out together and they were playing golf. And anyway, Moses hits the ball and it goes, "Ooh," right up within about 10 feet of the hole. Jesus says, nice one, Moses," he says. So Jesus lines up anyway and he hits it and up it goes about 6 inches away from the hole. So the old man comes up anyway and he gets it and he hits it and it chip-chop-chop over there. And this little squirrel comes and grabs the ball and runs all the way down and drops into the hole. Jesus goes over to the old man. He says, "Nice one, Dad." That's a golfer story. But this one is a true one. This one is a very, very true one. We had a bunch of guys over here. A lot of you guys met them too. We had a lot of lads over here this year for, and girls, men and women from Ireland for the Las Vegas Roundup. And there's two of the boys that I know very well. I've known them. I knew Jimmy. Jimmy is 25 years sober, so he was sober ahead of me in Dublin. The other fellow, Paddy, is about 16 or 17 years sober. And they're ferocious men to work in Alcoholics Anonymous. They just do the deal and do the deal and do the deal. They keep doing it. And they're hauling newcomers, and they got a group over there called the Mustard Seed, and they have book studies and they have concept studies. I've never been at a concept study, but they do concepts and the traditions and the steps and the whole lot. But anyway, there were 12-step in this town drunk in a town called Navan in County Meath in Ireland. This guy had been up in front of the judge 40 different times. He'd been drunk all his life. So finally the boys got a grip of him anyway, and they got him into AA, and they got him sober, and they brought him in. They went into the court with him this day. He had some wreckage of the past to clear up in front of the judge. So the judge says to him, "My God, is that you, John?" John said, "It is, Your Honor, it's myself." "Well, God save us," he said, "I don't recognize you." He said, "Were you in hospital or something? Or you made a dramatic change." He said, "You don't look the same man at all." "Well, no," he said, "Your Honor, I joined Alcoholics Anonymous," he says. "Well, that's wonderful, and that's marvelous. And I got a thing they call a sponsor. And he's here with me in the court today, Your Honor," he says. "Jimmy, he's here with me today," he says. "Well, that's terrific. Well, my God," said the judge, "and if it can work for you, John," he said, "and it'll work for anyone." "Well, that's true," he says. "It might even work for yourself, Your Honor," he says. And the sponsor says he was doing great up until then, he says. Because the judge was a rip-roaring alcoholic himself. And the judge just shuffled the papers and stamped them and said, next, you know. Well, I went into a court in Ireland where there was a friend of mine. One of my first 12 steps in Ireland was a fellow called Phil. And Phil was what we used to call a kiter over there. He was a check guy. He was good on the old credit cards and the checks. Ha-ha, a lot of heads nodding in recognition of that round here. A few people knows about that in here too. So anyways, Phil had been doing the checks and that and other stuff as well. But I met him on the street one day and I said to him, "Phil," I said, "you know," I said, "your problem," I said, "is the drink." "Well, I haven't had a drink in 6 weeks," he says. "Well," I said, "I don't know about 6 weeks." I said, "I haven't seen you for about a year," but I said, "before that," I said, you were in doo-doo." I says, this guy had been in prison twice. And he came from my hometown. And I never knew anybody from that town that had been in prison. Nobody, except him. So he was a disgrace. But anyway, Phil, and I said, you know, I'm going to AA and so forth. And he says, he said, "that friggin' outfit." He said, "I'm living with one up in the north of Ireland," he said, "and her son is in AA." He said, "the cheapish crowd of whores," he said. "They come home at night," he said, "they're drinking all tea and coffee and cookies and shit like that, he said. And he said, they wouldn't buy you brandy, he said, if your tongue was out that length. You know, the alcoholic thinking, they wouldn't buy you a brandy. I said, well, you know, Phil, I said, why don't you come down on Tuesday night and we have a meeting, and an open meeting. So he came down, himself and this other guy. They sat inside the door at the back, and they left before the end of the meeting. So I was in my, I had a gambling place in Dublin at the time, and I was in the shop the next day, and Phil walks in, you know, and he said, oh, he said, that was an interesting meeting last night. I said, yeah, good, good, good. So I didn't say much more to him, and he showed up the next night. And where are you going tonight? And I told him, and he showed up the next night. And where are you going tomorrow night? And the next night, he kept showing up. Make a long story short, he was, Phil is still sober. Phil and myself are still, we talk to each other all the time. But it'll just show you a bit about the alcoholic mind now. A year later, a year and 3 months later, this was in October, and the following January, 12 months, we were down in Galway at the convention. And Phil called me outside. I was his sponsor. Mo Frank. And he pulled this credit card out of his pocket. He said, no, this is a live one. A live one. He said, I just want you to see this. And he brinted the credit card and he tore it in two. And he put it in the dumpster. Now he said, you thought I was going straight all along. I knew friggin' well he wasn't going straight all along. I mean, he was talking to another one. I knew well he'd been doing cards, credit cards all through the year. But I didn't say anything to him. But he says, I had to do this now. I just have to finish this. He said, I'll tell you, when I came to AA with you, he said, that time, a year ago, he said, you know what was in my head? I said, no. He said, I thought, when I get sober, I'll really clean up with this credit card business. He was really going to go at it then. That was his thinking. So if you're new here tonight and you're thinking like that, you could be on track. We might be giving you a 21-year kick like we gave Phil last October. You never know. You never know. Don't ever be afraid. Don't ever be ashamed of anything that you did with drink. There, I wrote a little one-page article one time. It's called Do Not Become an Enabler. And in the one-page article I wrote, having a disease is nothing to be ashamed of. Having a disease and not doing something about it is totally unacceptable and must not be tolerated. And I was speaking directly to the family members on that, because every one of us had one, two, or three, usually one enabler at the tail end, usually down to one. We had an enabler, one enabler. It might be the judge, the cop, the counselor, the doctor, the wife, the father, the mother, the brother, the sister, somebody. We had an enabler right to the end. So that's the disease of alcoholism. Anyway, I came to Las Vegas, went to work here, started going to meetings here, and I've heard it many, many times, oh, the meetings here aren't like back home. I made my mind up before I came to Las Vegas. If they stand on their goddamn heads in Vegas, I'm going to do it. I'll stand on my head. If it's Alcoholics Anonymous, however they do it, I'm going to do it. And you know, there's no difference. Absolutely no difference. There might be, we might hold hands here. In other places, they don't hold hands. We might say, my name is John. Hi, John. They don't say, hi, John, somewhere else. Little bits like that. You might read the traditions here. They mightn't read them somewhere else. That's about it. The basic program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have traveled around the world. I've been to meetings around the world, right down in Asia and up in China and down. I haven't been to a meeting in China because there was no meetings when I was out there. But I've been down in Australia, New Zealand, and Tasmania, and on cruise ships and all around the place. And the meetings are the same. The program is the same. The exact same program, no matter where you go. So I'm not going to go on all night. Now, we're getting close to the final furlong here because there's nothing worse than somebody going overtime, especially if a newcomer, if an old-timer does it. It really pisses people off. Because they've been here all evening and they've been eating and sitting around and waiting for the dance and what have you. However, I'm just going to wrap it up now, and I'm just going to say a couple of words to the newcomers. Remember what I said earlier on about the two most important words. Show up. That's show up. No matter what your head tells you, show up. If you don't show up, there's no way you're going to get this deal. Might take you longer, might take you shorter. The book talks about it sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But it will always come to pass if we work for it. There's stuff on offer here that you just will not believe. I've often heard it said, and you'll hear it said if you keep coming to these meetings. If you wrote down tonight what your expectancies are going to be in 5 years' time, you'll sell yourself short. There's so much stuff on offer. You will become the best person you can be. That's for sure. That's on offer. For dead sure, whatever it is. If you're a window cleaner, you'll be the best window cleaner. If you're a rocket scientist, you'll be the best rocket scientist that you can be. That's what's on offer. So, having said that, I'm going to tell you one more little story here. It's about a little nun. And she went into the liquor store. Where's Dick? Dick was serving drink at the time. She went into Dick in the liquor store. And she said, Dick, she said, I need a bottle of brandy. And Dick says to her, Sister, aren't you a nun? She said, well, I am. She said, but it's the Reverend Mother. She's constipated. Oh, well, in that case, says Dick, we'll make an exception. So he wraps up the bottle of brandy, gives it to her. And about 5 o'clock that evening, Dick is coming out of the liquor store. And here's the nun, and she's singing and rocking and rolling, lifting her skirts up. And, oh, my God, Dick says to her, he said, in the name of God, he said, I thought you told me the Reverend Mother was constipated. She is, she says. And when she sees me, she will shit. So, that's all I got. Thanks for having me. Good night and enjoy your dance tonight.